It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, a 25-minute look into the world of officiating. I'm Editor-in-Chief Ben Ostro, joined by Mark Schultz, Senior Editor, the Deputy Editor Cam Philippe, Editor Chris Seubert, and Writer Analyst Pat Weber. We have a full house here. And so we're second week into Season 2 of the podcast. If you haven't caught up with last season, there was a lot that we went over, and by all means, catch up on that and get that wherever you listen to your podcasts. So the first thing we're going to look at this week is the push play. Yes, again, it comes up, and it got to the point where even the rules experts are exasperated by it. We had the Eagles and the Chiefs. Eagles, of course, are in a goal line situation, and they commit a false start, which was not detected. Probably about 5 frames of video, the false start. So, you know, depending on what the frame rate is, we're talking about, you know, really, really tight window. But when we get down to the push play, at least at the NFL level, we're looking at really complete. It's almost as if it's a trick play. We've said that if you're going to commit a trick play, if you're going to run a trick play, you have to have everything in compliance. And Mark, I think I'll start with you. Let's kind of look at what happened here. And well, we have what was an uncalled false start.
Yes. When you see it in slow motion, you want to fall off your chair or find your fainting couch because it looks very, very bad. But again, in 5 frames, it was probably a 10th of a second at maximum, which means that is a very tight call. But a false start was there. And we didn't see an exact look down the line, but boy, there was some neutral zone offside looking like it was happening. Everybody gets bunched in so tight. And then the snap happens and the ball disappears. It is a very difficult play to officiate because the quarterback sneaks in there. Everybody's tight. Everybody's landing on top of him. When was he down? And where was the ball when he was down? I mean, we saw that play in Kansas City. And if you can find the exact spot of that football in real time from the sideline camera, you're a better official than I am.
Yeah, so I kind of just want to go back to what you talked about when it came to the 5 frames. The angle I want to take on this is, you know, we've heard guidance in the past from previous heads of officiating that, you know, the key is anything greater than 4 frames is something that should be called. That's something that we've heard through, you know, directives, through videos, the training videos that come to the officials weekly. And again, 5 frames, 4 frames, like Mark said, when you're looking at something like this that's really slowed down, anyone can see something. Okay, this is not, you can see it slow down and think, okay, this is not right here. There needs to be a flag called for this action. But again, this kind of goes back to anything looking at replay. If you want to get into, you know, the crazy minds of people that want to review everything and apply certain fouls when they're not called, that can open up a can of worms that I really don't want to go down right now. But I really wanted to just focus on the 4 versus 5 frames thing. Again, you get into frame rate and then it gets really out of the realm of football. So while yes, it is probably should have been the right call to make is to put down a flag there for a false start. You got to start thinking, you know, when are we officiating on the field versus officiating in the film room with a super slow motion frame by frame button? Where do we draw the line?
Yeah. And the other aspect I think is it is really hard to officiate because you have so many bodies bunched up And I think the only two that have a shot at it really are the line of scrimmage officials, because the referee are kind of blocked from the back of it, especially with the guards right there, but with the backfield kind of blocking them. And that's just, it's such a long distance, you know, typically line of scrimmage officials, you're kind of keying on your, you know, wide receiver, tight ends. That's so far in on the line to see basically five frames, right? And catch that. But to Ben's point, they are instructed to officiate this like a trick play, and they should be, they should know all the tricks that Philadelphia is pulling with this at the, and focus on that. And I assume they'll get more directive on this as it goes back and forth until ultimately, like again, Ben said, maybe they just end up banning it at some point and something worse comes up.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen, it feels like every play now is just, it's under the microscope. Both sides are getting trying to get every advantage they can. And, you know, doesn't have the normal spacing of the play. So from like a line of scrimmage official's perspective, on a normal play, you can tell who is going early and whose hands are where. But I don't remember if it was last year or the year before with, I think it might have been Jason Kelce, so 2 years ago, but they were calling one of the guards for offsides, and it turns out it's the center's hand they're calling. So when it's all bunched up and so many bodies and the line of scrimmage officials are so far away, sometimes it is very hard to tell which one of the linemen are actually moving or, you know, where the ball is going. And it's under the microscope now on every time they run it.
And that's one of the things that we were, when that came up, of course, we're kind of flabbergasted that, you know, okay, yes, of course the center's hand, but when you just have that collection of bodies in there and, you know, you have the ability to zoom in from, you know, from the best perch in the stadium to get the view at home and looking right down the line. Yeah. Is that the left hand of the center or is it the right hand of the guard? And totally get how that was missed, but you know, that's a basic thing in these situations that just really can't happen. And I guess what it's really coming down to is that there's so many wrong things that can happen that there's a thought to legislate it out.
Yeah, and I don't know, Cam, is there a way that we can bring in the wings a little bit with the bunch formation, or are you just setting yourself up for failure if they sort of audible out on that?
We've seen that mentioned on our discussion boards forum on Behind the Football Stripes. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. So if you're thinking about an NFL field, if you're standing on one of the wing positions, either a down judge or a line judge, if the play is being snapped from directly in the center of the field, right between the hash marks, you're looking at it's 80 feet in front of you. That's where the ball is being snapped from. If you think about the field width is 160 feet, you're looking 80 feet ahead of you. Now, again, there's going to be some players that are closer from the dead center of the field. But at the same time, you have that bunch that we've been talking about. So you're still looking, you know, 60, 70 plus feet away from you and having to make a ruling on that. Now, what scares me about moving in the wings when they, you know, read this formation and potentially, you know, move them into the numbers or wherever, I don't know particularly where people would want to do this. What would concern me is, what if Philadelphia runs a trick play out of the tush push formation and they, you know, have a bootleg to the side or to the side zone or pitch it to one of the backs that may be lined up behind that's going to do the pushing? I think back to a play that took place probably about 15 to 20 years ago now. It was in a preseason game where line judge, former line judge Ron Marinucci, this was a game, I believe, in Pittsburgh. He was crashing in at the end of a play. And this is a little bit different, but this speaks to wings being in more than they need to. He was crashing in, I believe, thinking the play was over, but the ball had actually come out and he just got leveled by one of the defenders who was blocking for this fumble return because the ball had come out late. I'm sure there's video of it somewhere. I know with preseason games that are in that time frame, it's not as easy to find. But I just worry about, you know, while it may be easier to officiate, it may be putting those wing officials at risk of injury in case for some reason that they run a trick out of that formation. And again, the mantra, one of the many mantras of officiating, especially in football, is every play is its own universe. You have no idea what's going to happen on the play. The only people that know what's happening on the play are the offensive players. No one else knows what's going to happen. So sure, you could say, okay, Philadelphia is coming out in this formation. We're at the 2-yard line and we're going to move the wing officials into the numbers. Great. But then they run they fake this and run a bootleg out of it. And then it's running right at the official. Now he has to retreat and then get to the pylon. You know, I think that opens up too much of a can of worms, but that's just my opinion.
I agree 100% with what Cam said. Yes, the wings have to stay home on the sideline. What surprises me about this whole thing is the NFL is a copycat league. Why haven't other teams copied the tush push and put it in their repertoire? I just find that interesting. But the NFL's a copycat league. I had a tush push in my JV game earlier this evening. Visiting team, it's their high school JV version of a tush push. It's not as well executed as the Philadelphia Eagles. And it was more of a wedge formation. And according to high school rules, we told them, and I think this is NFL too, you can push the pile, you can't push the runner. And they executed it, and their wedge blocking worked, and their high school version of the tush push worked. I'm just surprised more NFL teams haven't copied it.
Well, do you see, and I'll throw this to Chris and Pat, do you see that maybe if we start to see more restriction on this type of play, which is we've always had historically in the rule book, push or pull the runner. But the idea is, again, pushing the pile doesn't necessarily make you pushing the runner. And so if it could fall either way, it would always fall in the direction of, well, he's pushing the pile. That's what it normally looks like in a goal line situation. Now you add this play that's specifically designed this way to look more like a rugby scrum. But that's the thing. If we add more layers to that, you know, what do we see coming out of that as far as, I mean, do we go back to high school mechanics and bring that in?
Well, I think when they got rid of the rule in 2005, obviously wasn't paying as much attention to officiating back then, at least I wasn't, but my assumption has always been that it was never really called because you can't tell in a scrum if they're actually pushing the player or the pile, so it was just never called. So it kind of, you know, just got rid of the rule. And unless they really add some overt measures to it, I don't think they're solving a whole lot by just going back to the way it was, unless without making the play even more difficult to officiate than it already is.
Yeah, and the final point is to the pushing the pile versus pushing the player. I think clearly this is pushing the player. On the high school side, that's what they've directed us to, you know, focus on is somebody or multiple somebodies pushing a single player or are they pushing the pile? And until everyone can agree on an interpretation, this is just going to be a continued question every week that Philadelphia runs this and how to officiate it and how the rule is stated until we can get directives from up high and say, this is what needs to be.
And real quick, Chris, you ran into a situation that wasn't so much pushing, but it was pulling on just this past Friday night. And you had a flag, but then you're like, man, I hope this is going to show up on film that way.
Yeah, because you never, again, as we've said, you never want to call something that isn't obvious to everyone. And assisting the runner, you know, half the coaches are like, what's that, right? And they don't even know what it is. But when you see it, I think those of us on Friday night, and Mark alluded to his game too, you kind of have to like make sure that they are checking all the boxes of the called. And in my game, it was 4th and 3. The runner made it to the line, was about to get hung up a little bit, it looked like, and then he had 3 of his buddies come in behind him and just push him through. And I was a referee and I had to like, again, take a look and go, okay, I think that player may not have made the first down if not for his buddies coming to help him. So I threw the flag, and I'll get rated significantly down because the coach got upset about it, but so be it. But it was an interesting play, and I think one that, again, all of us will see maybe once a year, if that. So, but we just got to be aware for it.
All right, so I'm going to stick a pin in that for next week's podcast. We're going to find out how was Chris graded on this play. We'll get a video clip in on the episode page on the website, just so that we can further rub it into Chris, and you know, you can give us some of your opinion on that. Let's switch over to we had in the Seahawks Steelers game, we had an oddity that quirky research has found that there's only really 12 instances of this happening since 1940. I actually prompted him to make the list because I remember a game that the Giants and Rams were playing where an unfielded kickoff on the opening kickoff wound up becoming a score for the kicking team. Basically, we're taking out fumbles because that's establishing possession. But, you know, a kick remains a kick until it is possessed. And if it's still loose, the kicking team can recover. Now, if it's a punt, then it goes back over to the – it goes to the receiving team at that point. But if it's a kickoff, it is absolutely the kicking team's ball. And if it's in the end zone, it's a touchdown. And so in this case, there were 12 instances. The last one was 2015. The one prior to that was the one in 1984 that I remember out in Los Angeles, in Anaheim. So the list is there on Quirky Research's website. And so basically, you know, you have a ball that lands in the landing zone. It's a free ball now. And when you're on the special teams unit, know all the little wrinkles, including stepping out of bounds to make the kickoff out of bounds, know all the wrinkles about all the things that can happen on a kickoff. And, well, then on top of that, as the deep officials being your referee or umpire, you know, being aware that anything can happen, especially on kicks.
Kicks are the craziest plays that you can officiate because everybody is spread out. Your fellow officials are spread out, and we try to keep the play boxed in. On top of that, there are different rules, as we saw in the Pittsburgh-Seattle game, in which the Pittsburgh receiver did not know the rule. He thought it was a punt. It'll just be downed in the end zone for a touchback. Nope, with this kickoff rule, it's live in the end zone, and you got to get it covered. And I give Scott Novak credit for covering the play first. You saw him cover the play, then.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mark. You know, special teams are always the craziest plays. At every level, there's a lot of special teamers or guys who are trying to make a play, you know, trying to get the next step to maybe a role in the offense or defense. So they are pushing the envelope to make a big hit, make a big play, whatever. And then we just don't see those plays a lot. So we don't have a lot of practice like we do on, you know, the 100 scrimmage plays we see every week versus the 5 or 6 kick plays. And so we always got to be prepared when weird things happen, and they will happen.
One other situation we saw this week, also in this special teams realm, we had Indianapolis kicking I believe it was a 60-yard field goal to win the game. And you know, it was short, and the Broncos had committed a leverage penalty. So we're looking at, you know, long field goal. The trajectory typically is lower on a kick like that. So it appears that the Broncos linebacker was attempting to scale over the line, put his hand down on his opponent. The rule obviously is anyway, whether or not it's your teammate or an opponent or both, that you cannot use them to gain elevation in order to block the kick or leap the line or anything of that nature. There's also a whole separate thing on the, let me go through that. You have an umpire and you have your side judge as your second umpire. Kind of walk us through the checklist, the pre-snap checklist of a field goal.
Now, we've talked about the double umpire position, or the mechanic, I should say, on field goals in podcasts from last season. So, again, one of those first things that you're looking at is action on the center, which was a big discussion. Action on the long snapper. And that was something that we discussed at length in one of our episodes last season. But let's say that there's no overt action that constitutes a foul against the long snapper. From there, those officials are really looking at the interior lineman, just like an umpire would in the traditional umpire position, as it still is in high school and eight man in college, but as it was in the NFL. But again, you're looking for, again, these things like potentially holding, defensive holding on the line of scrimmage. And that could be pulling somebody, kind of the pull and shoot that we've talked about, pulling an offensive player out of the way to allow someone in the second level to shoot through to block the field goal, something like that. Potentially, we saw in 2014, I believe it was, in a game in New York, pushing your teammate from behind through the line to try to get through to block the field goal. So all these tactics that are kind of employed to attempt to block field goals, those two, the side judge and the umpire in those positions, that's where they're looking. And I mentioned those two because those were a little bit not as common, but sometimes you'll see, you know, the leverage penalties where you are using your teammate or opponent to gain height, or leaping as well, which has changed a lot over the last decade or so. But again, that's going to be their key there. Now, this one here, did he really gain enough height in an attempt to block the field goal? You could argue it either way. These are generally the bigger players. So in order to propel themselves up, it takes a lot of force. But that's what those two officials that are right behind the long snapper and behind the defensive line, that's where they're keying.
And I think that the rule, it's not so much you're gaining elevation, but you're doing an action which you are attempting to block the kick. So you are pushing down in some way. It is not standard putting hands on shoulder or in the conventional blocking scheme. It's a lot clearer when a leaping player or jumping player does gain a little bit of elevation off of that leverage. It was very close. But again, when you have these low kicks, when they're that long, and a whole separate discussion is, we're having a lot of long kicks in the NFL with the K-ball rules being changed. That is something we just don't have time for in this episode, but I'm sure we will get back to that soon. And so, yeah, you have all these multiple parts going on, as Cam mentioned, pull and shoot and all that. Is there anything from, and I'm not even sure where that flag came from, whether it came from the umpire's position or if it came from the referee or umpire. Is there something that they can see from that side of the line?
When I saw the officials huddled, the double umpires were side judge Frank Steratore and umpire Brandon Cruz. I saw Cruz with his flag still in his belt. It may have been Steratore who threw it, may have been. But really, that leverage call should be the umpire's call. The referee is back there watching for a good snap and a good hold, and he's watching then for the kicker and holder and roughing on them. The double umpire is needed on those field goal attempts. And one of them caught it. And I think it was a good call.
And with that, that's the First and 25 podcast. We'll catch you next week.